Thank you very much. In fact, I had a difficult morning arriving from the US tonight and spending time till now in airports trying to get here. So, but it's really a pleasure. So I tried hard to get here, and I hope I will deliver an interesting presentation for you. And the reason why I'm interested is really the question of the panel: does higher public investment lead to more growth? Is a very topical one in this moment, because a lot of policy design at the European level is really going around the question whether we need more public investment as a driver for growth in this moment. So what I'm going to do is probably being much less theoretical, really speaking about what is the economic condition in this moment, and do we need a public investment, and if we need it, what is a good way for doing it. I start from the European challenge, as I was saying, then I talk a little bit as one possible rule of public investment and the European Investment Bank and investment plan for Europe, and then I talk about what's next, a little bit of policy debate on what could come forward. So the European challenge, I think if we think about a European scenario, economic and political scenario, I think the environment is an environment of recovery, but the recovery is very moderate. We have a number of important policy files in this moment that are banking union, capital market union, that what they are trying to do, despite the all technicalities that you see behind, is really creating an integrated European financial markets that allows transfer of capitals between countries on the financial sector and the banking sector. There is a lot of advancement in both files, but I think that we still see somehow behind the condition for a full integration of the European financial market is still lacking. So there is still room to do on that point of view. Monetary policy, I think there is a broad consensus that it is being taken to the extremes, and advantage of additional monetary policy action are probably going to be, the returns are probably going to be assessed with the potential for financial instability that they may generate, and the balance between the two is more unfavorable than in the past. Then there are divergence view on fiscal stimulus. I think we are in Berlin, and I think there are different ways of considering how much fiscal room is available. The countries that probably would be happier to do more fiscal stimulus don't have the room. Other countries have a different approach. And then we see structural reforms with a strong momentum, particularly in some countries that have done nothing in the past, that have started to advance structural reform quite aggressive, but this takes very much time. At the same time, we have what is the clear, I think, risk for Europe in the moment, and is really the political risk dominance. We know all about Brexit. We know about migration, that is a factor that is leading to somehow a consensus. I don't know if it's really a consensus, but it's a policy topic where the consensus is that we don't have a consensus in Europe, so we are doing nothing in order to find a real integrated European solution to the issues. And then we have the electoral agenda, and this is very crucial, because with referendum in Italy first, with your elections in Germany, election in France coming, the political debate is very much turning toward the internal thinking rather than the European thinking. And this combines to a sort of lack of European political leadership and European visions, and you see very much a retrenchment for Europe. So this is all the challenge, and I'm not only talking about the challenge. I think there are a lot of successes of Europe recently, but what I'm pointing is really a situation where the challenge are strong on the economic side and on the political side. And then we have the long-term issues, and the long-term issues open the door to talk about our topic, that is public investment and growth. The long-term issues are an issue on competitiveness, productivity slowdown, demographics that we all well know, and other two, one is I talked a little bit before already, a new pragmatic approach, but this is related to the political point that I was mentioning before. But if we sum up all what I said so far, and we also look at the EU competitiveness challenge, and particularly the productivity challenge, the issue of finding an investment as an area of cooperation among EU member states probably emerge like a safe choice in terms of a policy where there is a limited disagreement, can have some positive impact on the long term, and can also have some impact in the short term. But it requires some proper design of the European investment strategies, and I will discuss a little bit about it. So, that's the scenario, and I thought it was important to have to make it clear what is the scenario that I have in mind behind of the current moment. But then let's start looking at competitiveness. We have estimates. All institutions have their own estimate on potential output. Nobody believes in the estimate. You can easily play with the number and do strange things. But what is the message very clear is that everybody has seen a substantial downward revision of the estimate of potential output. In particular in Europe, we see a very strong component related to the demographic, but also to total factor productivity growth. And total factor productivity growth is really one of the issues that for the long term we should consider. We have a framework to think about what to do with competitiveness issues that reconnects also potentially to public sector intervention in various ways. We start from the concept of economic well-being, so potential output, growth, etc., so the wellness of the economy. And we think that this is related to a number of factors related to the capacity of change for firms, that is both within firms and across firms. So this idea of flexibility of the economy, capacity of reallocating resources, innovation, moving toward the frontiers, etc. But all of this needs a number of enabling factors, and the enabling factor really come are things that are close to policy intervention measures and very easy policy intervention measures. You can think about enabling factor. Some are more difficult. A number of structural reforms that everybody is talking about, competition, labor flexibility, regulation, governments. But you also have a factor like human capital, and there policies directed toward education can have a strong role. You have structural, strategic infrastructure as possible enable for this positive loop in terms of competitiveness, and you also have a financial market integration. So if you think all of these enablers all together, the idea that we were discussing at the beginning, a move toward more structural reform, flexibility of the market, etc., but also think about strategic infrastructure and education policies, investment in education and transformation of the financial sector, more integration of the financial sector as enablers for a more competitive environment, we have a justification for some of the policies that we are now considering at the European level. A couple of years ago, We were asked as an institution to try to think about if there was room for a public stimulus, you can call it, for an investment plan that would target more public sector, more investment, not necessarily public sector investment, but more investment in areas where we know that if you activate more investment, you can have a positive impact in terms of total factor productivities, competitiveness, etc. What we have done is a very, very basic exercise. We have in the bank, in the European Investment Bank, we have a team of some 400, 500 engineers and economists that assess projects in a certain area, research, development, innovation, strategic infrastructure, climate action and access to finance. And we ask them to look at what is the best practice in terms of technology, what are the level of investment of industries in various countries, etc., and trying to understand very much bottom-up if there were investment gaps in a very practical, defined way. What we came out is with quite some substantial number for investment gaps in this area, and that gave us the reassurance that if you do something, and if there is kind of, if at the practical level you can see that there are areas where you are really behind in terms of the frontier, in terms of investment, then you can have a stimulus, and you can think that this stimulus may not be negative or unusable on the economy. I go a little bit before going more on the more policy part, I go a little bit on where we stand in terms of investment in Europe. These are data for total Europe, and you see the recoveries of gross fiscal capital formation is now contributing since a couple of years to the recovery, but investment remains relatively low. And particularly, if you look at real gross capital formation, here we see by group of countries, and here the countries, nobody likes the names, but they are core Europe, I think you understand, cohesion countries, Eastern Europe, nobody likes any possible name of classification, nobody likes it, but we put this, and the emblematic VMS would be vulnerable member state, you could call it periphery. There are political issues. Italy is in there, and nobody likes to put Italy with the program countries, etc. But this is to give you an idea of the three group of countries. And here you see the dynamic of investment. So there has been some recovery. The recovery is mostly, but it's still sluggish and remain mostly in the core of Europe and vulnerable member states and cohesion countries. You start seeing a second round of correction in terms of investment dynamics. One graph that I find extremely interesting is this one, and this shows real gross fixed capital formation, and it shows it's a cumulative graph, and starting from Q1 2008. The way you read it is that today in 2016, so the blue line, that is a total investment, is still some 8% below the pre-crisis level. That's the way you read it. And then you see the different colors are the different components of investment. And what you see is basically that who is really not recovered. So intangible investment is the light blue that has always been positive, and that's a good news. Could be stronger, but throughout the crisis has always been a positive contributor to investment. What is still negative and basically has never recovered from the crisis is the part related to dwellings and other buildings and structures. So a lot of private sector construction, private sector sector, housing and real estate, etc. But also infrastructure is there, and I will show you a couple of additional graphs there. Well, the machinery component is kind of recovering. Starting from this, you can have a second way of decomposition, and you only look at infrastructure investment. And here you see various, that is in percentage of GDP, and you see that during the crisis, you had the first reaction of the crisis with a strong infrastructure-led stimulus, I would say. But then you see a substantial contraction, particularly in what is called government non-project, it's direct government intervention in infrastructure. You also see some corporate, more or less stable, then you have the project finance and PPP that are quite small. But I think the interesting part is the government contribution to infrastructure. If we look at another graph, and again we have the three group of countries, so you see that the blue line is core, and always we have centered at 100, the 2008 point. You see that somehow for core countries we see some inflection, some contraction below the pre-crisis level, also in terms of infrastructure investment. But where you really see a very strong contraction is in cohesion countries and in particular in vulnerable member states. And what we are finding out is really that, and I can also show you this, that is another complicated way to see the story. Here you have the orange point is public investment in 2015, and the line are the extrema of the 1995-2015, the band which was moving in these 10 years, and the small horizontal line is the average for this how much are they? 20 years. And then what you see that in mostly in that part, you are very close to the bottom of the all possible levels of expenditures in the last 20 years in terms of public investment. And this is particularly true in the countries that have gone through strong fiscal consolidation. So the message that we get out of this analysis of investment is that in reality there is an issue in terms of public investment in public investment in infrastructure, etc. There is an issue that is coming from the way in which the fiscal consolidation has been done in a number of countries. Probably it's much easier to cut when you are cutting investment than where you are cutting other more critical part of the expenditures. And if you start from this reality, so if you start from the economic scenario that I was pointing at, if you look at the investment dynamics and the fact that part of the lack in recovery in investment is due to the public investment in infrastructure, and you also have the idea that there is a need for the long term of investment in infrastructure, I think you can come to the idea that there may be a policy for a public investment in Europe. I skip a couple of slides, including Germany, that is a little bit a special case. I can detail it later, but I don't have enough time to stop on Germany now. I just wanted to go very quickly on the policy that is being implemented. The policy that is being implemented involves also the institution where I'm working, the European Investment Bank, that actually is a group composed by two institutions, the European Investment Bank and the European Investment Fund. It's an institution that is peculiar, and I don't want to advertise the EIB. I'm talking about an European institution and the role of that this institution is playing and the role that it would play. So I'm not here to say what we do in terms of lending, but think about this institution and the role that it can play in the policy debate in Europe. So the EIB is an institution that has issued bonds on the market. It has its own capital. The shareholder are the 28 member states. It issues bonds in the market. It's AAA financed. And it can get also some dedicated grants and guarantees from the Commission that used to leverage them like if they were capital that to provide instruments. But so this is the funding side. It has capital, and through the capital, it can lend, and it lends 90% of what it lends is in Europe and 10% out of Europe. And what it's starting to do is more and more trying to develop instrument where it will combine some risk-taking from this public money with more co-financing from private sector, so trying to enlarge the pie of what can be financed in the market. But what is interesting is the part inside, because inside the EIB there are two things. On the one side, this quality control of project, a project that is assessed by the EIB, passed through a strong screening in terms of economic rate of return, various elements, and in theory that should assure that it's a good project and you do something that is not wasting money on even if it's a public kind of intervention. The way it works is really, and I say a word that nobody will like, it's really kind of a European bond that you use to finance investment. And you use to finance investment where you have a good investment project because you have the quality control on the projects. So my claim is that you could try to think at using instruments like the EIB and using the EIB even more in order to do some more of the public investment that we were looking before. I just go quickly. These are some of our lending volume is around to 80 billion in the last year. And not very nice as a graph, but even if basically the 5% tells that the investment that we help generating accounts for some 5% of investment in Europe, but if you look at some specific areas that are infrastructure, urban, education, health, it accounts for quite a lot, even 18-19% of the investment that happens in those sectors. And there is a rule also in terms of redistribution with Europe if you look at our exposure as a percentage of GDP. I skip a little bit of detail because of timing issues. We are trying hard to demonstrate that we have some macroeconomic some impact. So we try to understand what we are really generated in terms of impact on the economy. And what we are currently trying to do, and I just go through it, is trying to do, these are a new simulation that we are trying to work, looking at our investment in the market. This was an exercise done with the results of our activities in 2013 to 15. We were trying to look through a model what is the short-term impact and the long-term impact of what we are doing. So there is a short-term impact that is the moment in which you start digging to build a bridge, and that's the short-term direct impact on the economy. But then there is a long-term impact that takes into account that in the moment in which you have built the bridge, transport costs are reduced, people can work more, whatever, etc. So you have all the long-term implications. What we find out is that we think we have an impact that has produced some additional level of GDP in the short term of 0.8, but in the long term will be some 1.1, and in the long term we will have a net job creation of 1.4 million jobs. You have heard, I'm sure, about the FC, the Investment Plan for Europe. So I show you just a little bit of what's happening in the project. What's happening is that through some capital as guarantees, some guarantees that the fund has capital, we have been asked to expand our lending, particularly in some specific areas where we would take a little bit more risk on the projects. And what we are doing, I think up of today, we are some 40% on what we are expected to deliver in terms of total lending in the activities. At the same time, we also think very much that the financing side and the public sector intervention in terms of supporting investment is not all. There is a lot to do in terms of removing the impediment to investment. So together with the Commission, we are launching also our own intelligence in trying to understand what are practical regulatory impediments that sometimes can lead to blocking investment project in some sector. And there are some example that we are looking at. I go to the very end, so what's next? I think starting from where I started, so the economic situation today, with all the complexity we see and the fact that due to the very difficult political agenda, at the end we end up having policies that will be a compromise on advancing on a few files. And that's the new pragmatic approach that is coming out following the Bratislava summit. And if this is the point, I think there is a clear case to have investment as one of these common narrative elements. Investment is something that tackles, if it's well done, it can tackle the long-term potential growth if you really target it well in order to affect areas that may have an impact in the medium to long term. And if you have a common narrative, as it is developing in Europe today, and not only in Europe actually, that investment is important, that removing barrier to the investment are important, etc., you end up having a much better planning capacity, much better focus in addressing the impediment to investment. And we start seeing it a lot coming bottom up in every single member state. An example, I think in many countries, I think most of the Eastern European countries had to have national investment plans where they were coordinating the behavior also of regions, municipalities, etc. In most of the core European countries, nobody had ever had these kind of plans. And then you are much more constrained in really having a full picture of what are the investment needs, particularly in terms of infrastructure in the country. So having the common narrative definitely helps. There is a stronger discussion in this moment, and I think it's one of the proposal of the Commission to potentially extend this Juncker plan on FC. So there will be a discussion in December, and this seems to be one of those areas where there is consensus coming among the 28 member states. Scope for more EIB activities and a fiscal stabilizer at the European level. These are the last one, probably is the new topic that is being launched in the discussion. So should the European Monetary Union be accompanied by a fiscal instrument at the European level that can play a rule in case of symmetric or asymmetric shock? The idea that we are starting to think is that you can have something based on investment. You have to be sure of what you do. The idea is that even if you have a public stimulus coming, it should go to investment that really have a value and that really have an impact in the medium long term for productivities. So you really need to do with some institutions that have a quality control. There is no agreement which institution would do it. I may have my own idea, but it's a part of a longer political debate that will come in the next couple of years, I think. And with that, I close. Thank you very much.